It's a rare thing to hear an entire community agree on something. There's always partings of the ways, big or small, opinions, arguments, squabbles. But it's a safe bet that if you ask anyone in the arts community in Ireland what they think of Michael D. Higgins, chances are they will answer with one voice. He's a champion of the arts, a tireless worker on behalf of all arts, a scholar, and a decent human being. I met with some highly respected members of the arts world to get a picture of Michael D. This is legendary film director Lelia Doolan.
Michael D. There are two aspects of Michael D. that I'd like to just talk about for a moment. One is his incredible effervescent spontaneity and going with the party. When we used to do the Film Fly in Galway, one of the years we had Arthur Penn, the great American director, come with Bonnie and Clyde. And I went up and I said to Sabina and Michael D, would you ever dress up and come down as to a gangster and his moll? And they did. And it was the kind of characteristic humour and understanding and feel for the arts that he has always had. And that's one aspect that has always I've loved and appealed to me. And the other one is, people think that Michael D. gets ideas in a random kind of way and that it's all very arbitrary. But if you look at the work that he did in getting rid of Section 31, preventing spokespeople from Republicans on the air, that he put that aside, that he re-established the Film Board, that he helped many arts venues all over the country, including the Town Hall Theatre in Galway, which we're sitting in now, and established for the first time T.G. Cahir, then Teleficina Gaeltachta, you can see a pattern of structured thinking that is very much at the heart of his ideas. He rises to ideas like a greyhound, and he loves turning ideas back and forth in the light. And the establishment of these places really expresses his sociological view and his scholarly attitude to the idea that ideas can't just come from individual geniuses, that they have to be carried by institutions. And that is his great engine and great spirit and great character that drives and supports and encourages and has done the arts all the time he was minister and since then.
The first time I saw Michael D. speaking live was in Dublin in 1984-85. He was speaking in the North Star Hotel at a creative activity for everyone.
Writer and performer Little John Nee.
And it really strikes me that the basics of what he was talking about then still apply, that we're all in this together, which I think is really important as a president. When he speaks about artists, I feel it's an artist speaking, and I know he knows what he's talking about, you know, that he gets it. So we're all in this together, and together we can make a change. And that's what he was talking about then, and I think it's the very same things that he's talking about now. Usually there's a rural and urban divide. Michael D. transcends that very much in the arts with his policy of facilitating the establishment of theatres throughout the country and funding throughout the country. The profile of the arts increased, I don't know how many fold, when he was in office as Minister for the Arts. He revolutionised the arts in the country. And he had an intimate knowledge as well over the detail and the minutiae of getting, you know, theatres established. He took a personal interest in rural theatres. Also, what really strikes me about him, so as working in the arts, I do workshops as well as my own shows, and sometimes I work with people with intellectual and learning difficulties. Sometimes you work with marginalised communities, people suffering from depression, things. So I can see the transformative power of art. We can see someone who has suffering, do you know? Someone who's in anguish, and you hand them a musical instrument and you show them a really simple tune, and they'll be transformed before your eyes. I've seen this countless times. As I say, it's nothing airy-fairy that I'm talking about, and that's my experience. There were times when all we had was our culture, our stories, our music, and our way of looking at things, you know? Michael D. appreciates all that and the power of that, you know? And because it sounds such a cliche, he's a champion of the arts. He's a champion of the imagination. There is so much despair in the country at times now that there's a danger of that becoming a culture of despair. So it's really important for artists to take a personal responsibility, and I think that's what we do, and all people, but to take that responsibility to imagine a better Ireland and to express that in our work. And I think Michael Dee's a great example of that, imagining, respecting curiosity and encouraging curiosity. And these are the reasons why I look up to him. You know, I look up to him as someone who has been there supporting the arts through the darkest of times as well, when it was unprofitable to support the arts. Michael Dee was there. He wasn't there in a political capacity. He was there as someone who got it.
She wore no jewels, nor costly diamonds, nor paint or powder, or none at all. She wore a bonnet with red roses on it, and o'er her shoulders hung the Galway shawl.
It was a huge, huge thrill. Yeah, it was quite unbelievable, totally unexpected, and such a great thrill to be there for the day.
Brendan O'Connor of the choir Cush Clothy, who sang at the presidential inauguration.
When we got the news, was the most amazing part of it. We were just happened to be out of the country on a tour down in West Spain, and got a phone call to say, "Would you like to be asked to sing at the inauguration of Michael Dee Higgins as the President of Ireland?" And I said, "Well, yeah, what can I say? I mean, it's just astonishing news." So I asked the singers then, and we were just all absolutely amazed at the honour. And the whole event was great. Working with the Army Band, fantastic experience too. The gorgeous space that Dublin Castle is.
Colm O'Brien, founder of the Project Theatre and former advisor to Michael Dee.
Well, again, it wasn't sure with the coalition government coming into office in, I think, early 93, what exactly his role would be, or whether he would get the brief. And then, of course, I think when he was formally nominated and made minister, Galway was en fête. The celebrations, I think Mockness went out on the street to celebrate, and I think even came up to Dublin to bring him back down to Galway. The 80s had been a difficult time for the arts. Underfunded, lots of reforms needed to be taken. So as Michael Dee, he said, "I have inherited a bleak landscape," when he was appointed minister. And it was the volume of things to be done. And he was ambitious, of course, because he wanted to do everything and he wanted to be everywhere. And of course, part of the problem was he had to be in Dublin and Galway every week. So it was busy, to put it mildly. And we didn't have an office because there hadn't been a department. So we had to set up, Michael Dee had to set about creating a department as well. So we had no place to base ourselves at the beginning. So it was quite chaotic.
But chaotic in a good way. Did you have a little tent? Or did
it was then the energy and excitement. And he, Michael Dee, of course, was up to nine. I mean, people doubted the wisdom of somebody as excitable as me going to work for somebody as excitable as Michael Dee, that we wouldn't be calming each other down, we'd be winding each other up. The agenda was enormous, so we just had to take it as it came. And one of the big difficulties as well was the huge expectation in the sector. Although Michael Dee could get round to it and he had boundless energy, he didn't have the budget. So I remember the Irish Times attacked him for neglecting the National Library. And Michael D was engaged and trying to deal and knew what the problems were, but they wanted everything sorted immediately, you know. Anyway, that wasn't possible. So prioritising and getting around to dealing with things and getting of things, everything before government. And the one thing that amazed me, well, it didn't amaze me really, but that I recall now about the early months, as how Michael D built alliances with the other ministers, with Fianna Fáil ministers, because it was a Fianna Fáil Labour coalition at the time. And he had a great rapport with Albert Reynolds, because he respected Albert's own contribution to popular music and so forth. And he was building these alliances because his ambition was to put culture at the centre of government business. So he was, as I say, engaging with and sharing and educating his fellow ministers.
He is a straight talker, but he's also a courteous person in debate. I've always found him to listen and to accept the viewpoint while disagreeing with it. And I do feel that quality, you know, will forever be at the disposal of the madness that we have gone through, are going through, and all of the bad times that we are having. It's a voice of sanity that keeps us on a kind of an even keel and puts it up to us to do better.
So he was engaging with and sharing and educating his fellow ministers. He had no civil service. People were being volunteered or being dragooned in from other sections of the civil service to create the department. So it was all building from the ground up. As well as when there were no then hidden agendas in there, because he hit the ground running and he was ahead of the posse. The one thing also that was evident across the first year was how the civil service respected him. The servants had great admiration for him because the minister had complete control, he, Michael D, understanding of his brief. So when they engaged with him, they were engaging with somebody who knew more about it than they did.
There absolutely is a sense in Galway that he is one of the tribe. Just on the steps of this very town hall, the launch of his campaign happened. Mike Diskin, much regretted, dearly loved manager of this theatre, organised us all, and we provided an afternoon of singing and dancing and talking and jokes and sent them on their way on the campaign. So Galway is proud of Michael D. He's a Clare man, like me, thank you. He's a man of here. I mean, I think that their home will always be here. Whatever they do for the nation and whatever they do internationally, this is where I think their heart and their lives are.
It was very stressful, at least for all ministers, having to commute between Dublin and their constituencies. So Monday, drive up from Galway, then work hard Monday to Friday, Michael D, then into the car again, back down to Galway for the weekend. So there were those kind of logistical pressures. So I remember I would get into the car with Michael D, not that I had to travel with him, but it was the only time I could get to talk to him. He used to say to me, I only want good news today. You know, when he'd see me coming, you know, his heart would drop because I'd be bringing all the complications, all the things that weren't working out to him. And he'd say, only good news, only good news.
Michael Day, up on his Michael Day, Michael Day, Michael Day, giving his all. Michael Day, up on his Michael Day, Michael Day, Michael Day, up on the lawn. Michael Day, up on his Michael Day, Michael Day, Michael Day, giving his all.
Lecture me in sociology. I was in UCG for the degree. Fair social policy, global equality. He was the king of the arts faculty. Michael D.
People would come to Galway and they would stand mesmerized. People all from all over the European world, from America, from Australia. And they would listen to Michael D. And they would say, this man can't be a politician. He's a poet. He's a thinker. He's a scholar. He's an engine of change and ideas. And that is what he is. So the great quality, I suppose, that he has is that he challenges and he also enables. That he offers opportunities for people to do new things and to be supported in doing them. I mean, the arts was one aspect of his brief only. There were others relating to the environment, to the waterways, to all of those. And in all of those areas, he has had a beneficial and a benevolent effect. So I just see him as a great character who both represents and is part of a great rowdy, rambunctious, difficult, troublesome, real artistic community that we all are.
So his legacy is huge. He's universally adored by the arts community, and artists and arts organisations will defend him.
When they feel appreciated, and it's a reciprocity, they want to show their appreciation of him. Because he doesn't say, here I am, give me my due. He comes to say, I come to give you your due. And it was such a loss when he went out of office as a minister. So it's great to have him back as president.
I suppose his grand humanity is really at the heart of everything he does and says. I mean, his head is a wonderful asset to this country, but his heart is equally important. And for as long as he can continue to, not be kilt stone dead by the burden of work that he's undertaking, so much the better for all of us. Because I think that decency and openness and generosity, is a magnanimous opportunity for people to see and to respond to. And there you are. That's the offer. We have to rise to it.